Get a deeper connection with the Cougars of BYU Sports.
God gives us a gift, and we use that gift until He takes it away.
Deep Blue.
Just sitting down afterward and being really tired and thinking like, wow, I just won the U.S. championship.
This is Deep Blue. Here's your host, Jason Shepherd.
Thanks for tuning in for a brand new episode, Deep Blue. This is the show where we get to know the person behind the number that you see on the field or the court. These are the true stories of BYU athletes from their own mouths. And today's guest, BYU track superstar and U.S. national champion in the steeplechase, his name is Kenneth Rooks. Kenneth, thanks for taking a few minutes today. I appreciate it.
Hey, you're welcome. I'm glad I can be here.
Great. So let's start with this. Kenneth, have you always been Kenneth, meaning no Ken? Have you ever been Ken at any point in your life?
I have never been Ken at any point in my life. There have been times where I've been Kenny, but not Ken. I've never been Ken.
So what were the times where you were Kenny? Is that like a parent thing?
Well, actually, I'm Kenny a lot of the times now. A lot of my teammates call me Kenny.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Kenneth is sort of like the professional name?
Well, Kenneth is probably what I prefer.
Okay.
But there are a lot of people that call me Kenny. And like I had friends in high school that called me Kenny as well.
Okay. But so. At no point, Ken.
No.
No
I've
Ken.
Never been Ken.
Okay. All right. It's no Kens allowed in this show. I'm always interested in talking with people who are an only child because it feels like it usually goes one of two ways. Either they loved it or they hated it. Where do you fall on that?
Well, where I fall on that is I haven't really had any other experience. I haven't had siblings, and so I don't really know 100% what it's like to have siblings. I think sometimes hanging out with friends growing up, I got treated like a sibling a lot of times.
Yeah.
I feel that I've been able, like, I love my family. It's been good for me. I don't know how it would be if it was different, but I'm grateful for my family, and yeah, that's kind of my thoughts on it. Not really one way or the other. I mean, there are times where I am a little bit, like, lonely, but at the same time, I've been able to figure out just how to do things by myself sometimes. And I also do enjoy spending time with my parents as well.
Do you consider yourself, like, were you spoiled as an only child? Do you think you got spoiled quite a bit?
Well, I don't think that I was spoiled in the sense of the stereotype of maybe an only child getting spoiled, getting everything they wanted. I haven't got everything I've wanted. I mean, when I got a phone, I paid for it. When I got a car, I paid for it. So I have, like, I don't think there's anything that I, okay, what's a better way of saying this? I have been spoiled in many ways because
yes.
because I am an only child and my parents focus their time on me. But there's been a lot of decisions that they've made to help me work and make some of those decisions and help me work toward things that I want to have or get.
Yeah, so. Being an only child did not keep them from teaching you
yes.
the right way to handle things growing up. I like
yeah.
that. That's very good. I know absolutely nothing about Walla Walla, Washington, other than it's fun to say.
Okay.
What was it like to grow up there?
It was awesome to grow up in Walla Walla. That's where I've spent most of my life. I was born in Portland, Oregon. And we moved to the Tri-Cities when I was 3 years old. And so we lived in the Tri-Cities until I was seven. And then I actually got baptized in Walla Walla. And I like the feel of Walla Walla. It's not a big city by any means. But it's still a sizable area. And I just really like it there. Yeah, it's been a good fit for me. By the way, fun fact about Walla Walla, I don't know if you know about, but Drew Bledsoe is from Walla Walla.
I don't think I knew Walla Walla. I knew he was from Washington. I don't know if I knew Walla Walla.
Yeah.
So is that it? Here's the question. So we know what Drew Bledsoe has done.
Yeah.
You're a national champion. Who's the bigger deal out of Walla Walla?
I think it's hard. It's hard to compare football players to track runners.
I think you're shortchanging yourself there, Kenneth.
Okay.
just go ahead. You can, from now on, just tell people, yeah, I'm probably the biggest thing that's come out of Walla Walla.
Okay.
Did you play other sports in high school
besides
track? What did you do?
I played football my freshman year in high school. I played football in middle school as well.
What position?
I played a few different positions. I played quarterback, played running back, played wide receiver, played cornerback.
You were all over the field then.
Yeah, I was all over the field.
So what made you then gravitate towards track as you got older and obviously once you got to college?
Yeah, I started track in middle school. And my freshman year, I had a really good track season in high school. And because of that, I wanted to try out cross country. And I tried out cross country my sophomore year in high school. And I actually went to a smaller high school. And so I went to College Place High School. It was a newer high school. And we were in a lot smaller division. But my sophomore year in high school, I won state in cross country. And so I didn't go back to football. And that's kind of how I got into doing cross country. As far as track, I started it in seventh grade because I looked up to my dad. He ran cross country and track in high school, and he'd been successful at that, and he'd run a few years in college, and I wanted to be like him and recognized I also had a talent for running. I was fast, and I could endure a little bit better than some of the other people that were around me, so that's how I got into track. I also played basketball in high school. Because I was at a small school, I had the opportunity to do that. And I played all 4 years. I wasn't like spending a lot of time on the court, but I was on the team. And we weren't a super great team, but it was fun. I think basketball was my favorite sport in high school.
Any particular reason why?
You could do it kind of any time, anywhere kind of a thing. I mean, you do need a basket and you do need a ball, but you can just go out and shoot hoops and or play a pickup game with people, and it's fun.
Yeah.
And I like to compete, and running hurts a lot more than basketball does. And I think in high school I appreciated the fun that I could get out of basketball. And track was fun too,
yeah,
but it hurt a lot more, and so I preferred basketball. My mindset started to shift a little bit more going into my senior season, because that's when I started to really focus more on track, because I knew I could get a scholarship running in college. So,
steeplechase is an incredibly difficult event. Why did you choose that event?
Yeah, it seems interesting that I would choose that event because it does have a little bit more difficulty to it. I think that the barriers actually help break up the race a little bit more. In cross country, I liked running cross country, mm-hmm, but I did not like the 2 mile on the track. And I feel like in cross country, the different aspects of the course, the hills, the downhills, and not having to count laps, I think all of those things helped me like cross country a little bit more, helped distract me from what I was feeling like with just help me just run and just focus on that. I think in track with the 2 mile, I focused a lot more on laps. Like it was 8 laps, and that was a long distance for me in high school. It's not like 8 laps is a lot shorter now. I think college training has helped me get used to that, but the barriers give me something else to focus on. I don't have to think as much about, oh, I'm hurting. I can just focus on the next barrier. I can focus on. And one thing that I've worked on in races is just focusing on staying in the moment, focusing on running the next lap, focusing on running the lap that I'm in, and staying present. But
the steeplechase part of your career, though, that's been at BYU. That was not something that you were doing prior to. So. Why wasn't it an earlier part of your sports history, and then why did you ultimately get into it once you got here?
Well, Coach Icestone thought that I would be good at it. I had been involved in other sports in high school. I had played football. I played baseball growing up. I actually played baseball through middle school as well, just in the summers.
You just were an active kid, weren't you?
I was an active kid. I like sports. I like playing sports. I'm competitive, and I like playing sports. If I wasn't running right now, I probably would be involved with a lot of intramurals right now. But Yeah, he knew that I had been successful and had done other sports, and generally people who've done that in the past were able to take to the hurdling a lot better in the steeplechase because of their athletic ability. And so I started the steeplechase in college because of that, because of the encouragement from Coach Istone, and it worked out really well.
Was it always BYU for you?
Well, once I decided to run in college, BYU was at the top of the list. I thought about Utah State. I thought about maybe Washington State, but it came down to Utah State and BYU were my top two choices, and I felt a lot more comfortable and confident with working with Coach Istone, and knew that running was going to be a big enough part of my life, in addition to the academic.
Sure.
Because I actually was, Utah State was appealing because they had a really good engineering program, and I'm studying civil engineering. And BYU also has a good engineering program. But the Utah State's program was appealing to me. But I knew that I would be spending enough time with track and cross country that I wanted to make sure that I had a good coach, good teammates, and I felt like I just connected really well with them when I came on my recruiting visit to BYU.
Well, once you committed to BYU, your freshman year was 2019, I believe.
Yeah.
You weren't on the travel roster that first year. How frustrating was that for you, and how did you overcome that?
Yeah, it was frustrating. I went to a small school, and I was the guy all the time, and I mean, I'd go to some bigger meets and have some other competition, but I was almost always the guy, the best guy out there, like training by myself or races or, I mean, I didn't win everything in high school, but coming to college, I was kind of a little bit more of like a smaller fish in a big pond. We had a lot of really good depth in the BYU team, a lot of really good runners. It was a little bit humbling to come to BYU and to be at the very back of the pack, which was just not something I was used to. And I focused on trying to adapt to that, and it took me a little bit to adapt to that. And I wasn't able to be fast enough to travel in cross country that my freshman year. And I mean, that was also in part because we had a really good, really deep team. And I've been lifted a lot by having really good teammates who are good people, but also good runners, and so we can push each other. Through just trying to be patient with myself and working at it, I was able to eventually get that travel spot in outdoor season, and then I qualified for nationals in the steeplechase, which exceeded my expectations. Although I kind of kept in the back of my mind, you know, maybe there is a possibility that I could qualify for nationals, because my goal time that I went into with Coach before I knew anything about the steeplechase, I said, I want to run 8:45. And he said, well, if you run 8:45, then you might be able to possibly have a shot at making nationals. And so I said, okay. And so that was kind of in the back of my mind in that freshman year. And then I had a really good race where I fell, and my shoe came off, and I finished the race and almost ran a personal best. I'd run 8:40. I ran like 8:47 in that race, and I'd run 8:46 earlier. So I was already kind of around what my goal time what I had set, and I knew that I could run faster. And then I ended up running faster and qualifying for nationals my freshman year in the steeplechase at the regional meet. But lots of things built up to that. Just adjusting to the college training and working hard and having teammates that could push me and having a good coach, that all just helped me adjust. And I'm really glad that I kept that open-minded, didn't put a limit on myself. I think I learned that in part because my freshman year in high school, my coach at the beginning of the year told me, I think you can qualify for state. And I was like, I don't think I can do that. I don't think that's going to happen. And then I qualified for state later on. So I was just keeping an open mind, trying not to put a limit on myself, and going out there and seeing what I could do, and being a little bit naive. And sometimes it's good to be naive and see what you can do. So
we'll have more with Kenneth Rooks when we come back. This is Deep Blue on BYU Radio. Welcome back in to Deep Blue. My name is Jason Shepherd. Thank you for joining us today. My guest is Kenneth Rooks. And Kenneth, before the break, we were talking about your freshman season at BYU in 2019. After that season, you got your mission call from the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints to Uganda.
Yeah.
Now, that was also during COVID, so you were moved around a bit. Take me through what that experience was like and ultimately being reassigned very, very close to BYU.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was so happy to be able to be assigned to be a missionary in Uganda. I served there for 8.5, 9 months, and then March 2020 came around and we got sent home. And I was not expecting that. I think there were a few missionaries that kind of thought that maybe that was going to happen. There was maybe starting to hear rumors, but I didn't think that was going to happen. And it was just unexpected to get that call one day as we were headed out to go teach a lesson, to go back home, pack our bags, and we were leaving. So, and the long flight home, actually. I was on a plane for 36 straight hours
on
the way home without getting off. It was a long trip on the way home.
I can't even imagine a flight that lasts that long.
Yeah, it was a long time. It was tricky. I mean, because we got out of Uganda, went to Ethiopia, stayed the night there, and then we picked up some missionaries there. And then it was a chartered flight on Ethiopian Airlines, and a lot of the airports were closed. I mean, the Uganda airport closed right after we left. So, it just was hard to try and, because we had to pick up other missionaries from South Africa. That's where they were trying to get everyone else to, so that they could kind of get everybody home. It was just a little tricky trying to get everybody in and out, and then trying to fly different places. So yeah.
Well, and then you go to Orem.
Yep. And then
you come to Orem.
I come to Orem.
Right here.
Yeah. It was awesome to be a missionary in Orem. I really enjoyed my time serving here. And even though it was close to home and I could wake up in the morning and go outside and see the Y on the mountain, I felt like a missionary. I was doing what I needed to do to be a representative of Jesus Christ and invite others to come into Christ. And one thing I learned in Orem, you know, in Uganda, my first area, we were meeting in a tent. That was where we met for church. And in Orem, I was covering two stakes in my first area. And then we ended up covering just one stake. But just that kind of contrast as far as like the church, how the church has been established and how the church is. And I was able to learn that, you know, the work of the Lord is the same everywhere, that sometimes there are approaches that are a little bit different, but the principles are the same, and it is the Lord's work, and it's His work, and it was awesome to be a part of it here. It was awesome also to, in my first area, my mission president assigned me to cover an area where my coach lives, and so we were...
I know the area you're talking about.
So it was a little interesting, and when he first told me where I was assigned, I was like, oh, well, that's where my coach lives. And he said, oh, well, I guess the Lord wants you there. And so then I went
So how often did you bump into him?
He was a bishop at the time, so I had to work.
A lot.
I had to work with the bishops. and we actually ended up teaching a few lessons together, which was fun. And we were able to help somebody get baptized as well. So, yeah.
How was that aspect? Because certainly there's always a bond between a player and a coach, or an athlete and a coach, but to have that extra layer of bonding where you guys bonded on a spiritual level, that's pretty unique.
Mm-hmm. It is unique, and it's very cool that I have that connection with Coach Istone. But Coach Istone's a good person. I think, like, generally, he wants the best for all of his athletes, and he's an awesome person. I am so grateful that I was able. I have the connections with him, both as a coach and also as a friend, and that I was able to have that spiritual connection with him as well on my mission.
We hear a lot, and we talk a lot about it in terms of football and basketball, in terms of guys, you know, coming back from their missions and getting ready and into peak physical form to play those sports. For your sport, how was it coming back and getting reacclimated to not just quote unquote normal life, but the life of an athlete again?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I had to go through a lot of adjustments on my mission. I felt like I served three different missions because I went to Uganda, then I got reassigned to Orem, served in Orem, and then I actually was able to go finish the rest of my mission in Uganda. And so there's a lot of different transitions, and it was even a transition during those 2.5 months home waiting to get reassigned. So I think that my mission experience taught me to just kind of like roll with the punches and just keep moving forward and just keep going. And, you know, sometimes it's tough and sometimes it's just things, I mean, you're just struggling, but you just have to move forward and just trust that things will eventually work out. And I think I did that a lot when I was coming back from my mission. I mean, it wasn't perfect. It was hard to transition back from my mission. And even getting back into shape was difficult, in part because I pulled my hamstring pretty bad in May before I came home. So I didn't run at all the last two to three months of my mission because I couldn't. I pulled my hamstring pretty bad. And so I was getting healthy from that and just coming back. But I was just patient and trusted my training. One thing that I could trust in is that, you know, the Lord's watched out for me. If it's in the cards, if it was going to work out, then it was going to work out as long as I put my best effort forward. And if it didn't work out, then that was, I mean, it would be hard, but right. I would have had to adapt to that. And it did work out. I ended up getting back into shape actually fairly quickly. And I would travel during indoor season after getting back in July. And then I was kind of on that steep curve of getting right. back into shape. And I was able to run even faster than I did before my mission in track season. And I got sixth at the NCAA championships, ran 8:22. And I'm just super blessed that I was able to have the success that I did as soon as I did after my mission.
Yeah, what a blessing that is, because physically, stuff like that probably shouldn't happen. There's no real reason why you should feel like you are better and faster after not doing it at that level for 2+ years.
Yeah.
What a blessing that is to be able to come back and to be able to have the success right away that you did. And to be able to obviously, and we'll get to that in a second, obviously we know what the accomplishment was. What a great blessing for you.
Yeah. You know, I'm just grateful for everything that the Lord's blessed me with. I don't know exactly how to, but at the same time, I'm also grateful, in the process of all of this, I've had good races, I've had bad races, I've had lots of learning things that I've had to go through, challenges I've had. But one thing that I always come back to is that I know that the Lord loves me and I know that He cares about me. And I'm just super grateful for that. I remember during indoor season this last year, I ran a race and I did not perform like I wanted to. And I just felt an overwhelming sense of gratitude that the Lord had provided me these opportunities to be here. I'm just super grateful, and it's important to be grateful. I think sometimes I have to remind myself of that too. So
let's set the scene before we get to the USA championship. So May, June, and July, there was a lot happening for you and a lot of success leading into that race in Eugene. So first of all, in May, you broke a 46-year-old BYU record and simultaneously became the second, which is now the third fastest steeplechase runner in collegiate steeplechase history. In June, you won the NCAA steeplechase championship, making BYU the first school in NCAA Division I history to win back-to-back men's and women's steeplechase titles. So before we get to the actual race in July, you were on this upward swing heading into that race. How were you feeling going into that race about what you had done prior to?
I was feeling confident in my abilities because I run so well at the track meet the Sound Running put on in early May, and I had the success that I had at the NCAA Championships, and I felt that I was peaking at the right time. I felt like my training, although like it had been a month since I had raced, was in the right place. And I just felt that I had a great opportunity if I went out there and did the same things that I had done the rest of the season, that things would turn out well. I was definitely hoping to get a top three spot so that I could make the world team. Mm-hmm. But I also knew that I was racing against a bunch of really good guys, and I respect them a lot, and I know that they're good, and I know that they're also peaking for that moment as well. And so I went into that race with that kind of mindset, expecting it to be a very tough race, a race that I would run a personal best in, we'd probably push ourselves. And I just had the confidence that things were going to work out as long as I made good decisions. And I fell in the race, which was something I had to adapt to. And I kind of wish, I mean, in the moment, I did not want to fall. But I'm really happy with how I responded. I'm also happy that I had kind of thought a little bit beforehand of what I would do if I fell.
Okay, I want to ask you about that, because that's so interesting. And you joined us on BYU Sports Nation, and you told this story.
Yeah.
And you had mentioned that prior to, you said, okay, if I fall, this is how I'm going to handle, this is what I want to do. You had sort of prepared. What I'm curious about, do you do that before every race, or was that a unique prompting before that?
I think it was a unique prompting because I fell in practice 2 weeks prior, and so it was just kind of fresh in my mind. I was like, okay, well, it's possible I could mess up, or someone else could mess me up, and I could fall. That just could happen. Like, what should I do if that happens? And so I think that it was a unique prompting. That's not something that I had prepared for really before any other race. That's not something I'd really thought about. So that was I'm really glad that I did.
Well, and it got everybody's attention. I mean, it was all over social media, mm-hmm. and people were obviously thrilled for you, and it made everybody at BYU proud. And to be a national champion, what did that mean to you? And did it mean more having gone through what you did in the race?
Yeah, it meant a lot more to me having gone through what I went through in the race. It was very surreal to finish that last 50 meters realizing I was going to win, and knowing that I had fallen, and knowing that I had got back up, and that I had made it back, and that I was going to win. And that's kind of how it was. It was surreal. I mean, it felt entirely surreal. Like, did that really just happen? just sitting down afterward and being really tired and thinking like, wow, I just won the U.S. championship, and I just did it after I fell. Holy crap.
I think I even made a joke about it, not making a joke about the situation, but I said I would imagine that Kenneth will probably be used in a lot of Sunday school lessons, you know, over the next little while, because of the lesson that it was, that mm-hmm. when you fall down, pick yourself up and keep going, because you never know what could happen.
Yeah.
I would imagine you've probably had people come up to you and talk to you about that mm-hmm. it was an inspiring story.
Yeah, people came up and talked to me about that almost immediately. Like, after the race, I went and did my victory lap with the other two guys who were in the top three, and like there was people there that were saying thank you for like doing what I did and how inspiring it was, and thank you for being a good example for my kids, or like, that was just awesome. You're like, that was great. That was so fun to watch, or different things like that. So I think that I still have not really fully grasped or understood all of the ways that my performance has affected others in positive ways, but I know that it has, and I'm grateful that it has. I want to make sure that I'm trying to do good things, and that I can be a force for good. And so it's very humbling that I was able to do that in that way, and I was definitely not expecting. If I won, I was expecting people to be excited
sure.
for me, but like thinking about it before the race, like people would be excited for me if I won, but in the way that I did it, it was a lot more meaningful, and it is cool to think of the gospel analogies with it, and that you, if you fall, you need to get up and keep going, but at the same time, like if you fall, it's important to remember in the gospel that you know that if you rely upon Christ and you choose to repent and do all of those things, you know, and you've been promised that you can win, and you can.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit more certain with the gospel, I think, than with my race, but it's cool to think about that. And yeah, I'm glad that it's been a blessing to other people.
Yeah, it's pretty cool when you go in with a singular thought that I'm just racing here. I'm gonna be part of this event. And you have no idea how far-reaching what you're doing can be for others. That's a pretty cool story. I'm curious what doors it has opened up to you since that race.
It's opened up like this opportunity here. I'm talking to you. I'm talking about my race. I'm talking about a little bit about me. Talking about my mission. Talking about some of the analogies that have happened. Like the good things that you can learn from my race. That there's those opportunities there. And then there's also opportunities with, you know, that I am a little bit more popular now because people have seen the race. So
there's nothing wrong with that, right?
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. That's true. But it's also provided opportunities for me personally that maybe some NIL opportunities that I'm working on setting up. And just lots of people that want to take advantage, I guess, of my performance in that way, but also take advantage of like trying to learn from my performance and those are some of the doors that have kind of been opened for me there, and it's made me contemplate a lot about professional running as well.
Well, Kenneth, I appreciate you taking a few minutes. It's a fantastic story. It's been fun to get to know mm-hmm. you on a better level. So I appreciate the time. Thank you so much for doing this. It's been fun.
Hey, you're welcome.
All right. Thank you once again to my guest, Kenneth Rooks. My name is Jason Shepherd. Thank you so much for listening to Deep Blue. You can download and subscribe to Deep Blue on all podcast platforms or find all of the episodes on the BYU Radio app. Deep Blue is a production of BYU Radio.